Disrespect welcomes Ben Bishop of Community Functionality Facilitation. He's going to talk to us about the impact of disability provisions in the budget and, I think you'd like to hear what happened to them. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, first of all, my colleague and I, William Schmier, were looking at the budget when it came out on the 27th, and we never really, a lot of our concerns and a lot of what we do deals with the federal government, so we rarely ever read a provincial budget, but this time we decided to. And when we looked in the budget under the section, and I'll accentuate that, the section is social services and child services, okay. Children's services. Okay. So if you look under social services and children's services in the budget, you will see, everybody in out there in disability land, that there is a section in there that states that they're going to cut the community startup benefit, okay, yeah. for people with disabilities, which means for all of you that if you guys are on Ontario Disability Support and if you guys get evicted in the middle of the month, you are not going to go to a new apartment. You're going straight to a shelter or the street because you do not have money for the first month's rent,
yeah,
or last month's rent, okay, which is what CSUB provides or community startup benefit. Secondly, for those of you guys that own homes, okay, you're not safe either, okay, because the McGuinty government has decided that you no longer need to repair your home, okay, so that means that there's no longer a home repair benefit, okay, or home maintenance benefit, as it's called. So that's gone. So if your furnace fails, or your roof fails, or whatever, gas main blows, whatever, you're going straight to the street, or you're going to a shelter, because you no longer have CSUB to be able to get an apartment, mm-hmm. okay, while your sale of your house is going through, okay?
Did they try to justify this?
No justification was given. Instead, what they did was they smoke screened it by releasing the information regarding the union jobs and the teaching jobs that would be lost and so forth. That was the smokescreen of the government jobs that were being cut. So they were hoping that nobody would look at the disability fine print.
I see.
Okay. Now, I'm sure a lot of you out there are not really familiar with the act that governs us people with disabilities called the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act.
Go, 3, 2, 1, go.
This act covers every one of us, okay? And the reason I'm saying us is because each person with a disability, all of our services and all of our access to those services is covered under this new Disabilities Act, okay, under the AODA Act, or Accessibilities for Ontarians with Disabilities Act 2005. So each one of us has to know what those customer service regulations mean. Okay, and everybody can get a copy of the customer service regulations on eLaws. They're free, and the code for the laws is ON429/07. Okay, ON429/07. Okay, and 429/07 is the what they call the customer service regulations. Okay, because customer service standards and regulations for the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act, okay? Now, the integrated customer service standards covers everything else, which came out this year, okay? So that's everything from building services, employment, everything else is covered now under that one package,
okay?
So that one package covers everything.
All right.
Now, the reason this is relevant is because cutting those services, okay, just that, cutting the community startup benefit and cutting the home maintenance benefit, okay, is actually a Disabilities Act violation, okay, because you cannot, okay, the dignity and the independence of the disabled must be respected under the customer service regulations. So that means services must be rendered in a way that allows us to maintain our dignity and maintain our independence. Well, every one of you and myself, I would gather that, you know, we wouldn't think it's too dignified to be out on the street And we definitely don't think it's too dignified to have to go to a shelter if we own our own homes. Because that kind of defeats the purpose of having a home.
Yes, it does.
Okay. And to make matters even worse, okay, they're going to try, the McGuinty government, as they, was going to try to amalgamate, get ready for this, everyone, Ontario Works and ODSP. They wanted to combine the two. Now, anybody who was on ODSP before 2003, okay, would realize just that that does not work. Because that means you're dealing with Ontario Works workers, okay, for ODSP issues, okay? ODSP, Ontario Disability Support, and Ontario Works, combining them is, again, an AODA violation, Disability Act violation.
The dignity and the independence.
Not just that, but under Section 3, okay, of the customer service standards, services are to be integrated as long as the integration provides greater access to services. This does not provide greater access to services because the restrictions placed in the Ontario Works program are entirely different than those on the Ontario ODSP program. And the fact that, you know, people on Ontario Works can't own a vehicle, okay, people with Ontario Works can't leave the country, okay, so to punish people for being disabled just because you ran up a debt is not really fair to the people who are disabled. So the idea of trying to pay the debt down on the backs of the disabled population by scrapping their benefits is actually an illegal action under the new Disabilities Act that Mr. McGuinty had actually brought in. So all of us, meaning all of us who are disabled, okay, should call your MPP, call your MPs, okay, and scream at the top of your lungs, you really do not want your ODSP benefits to be amalgamated with Ontario Works. Okay, because you don't want to pay, okay, with money you don't have, okay, for the government's mismanagement of the public trust. Okay, thirdly, ODSP, okay, is a system that provides disability benefits. It is not an employment system. So to even amalgamate any of those services with Ontario Works, which is geared towards non-disabled persons, okay?
And
they do, well, they do have disabled people on board that are awaiting adjudication to ODSP, which are awaiting to come on ODSP, but they're not part of the Ontario Works program, okay? So people who are on Ontario Works, who are permanently on Ontario Works. Yeah, there's some of them that are on who are disabled, but that's only because they have not been adjudicated yet for ODSP, or they're awaiting appeals, okay, to be adjudicated for ODSP or Canada Pension Disability or whatever. Okay, so disability programs are not compatible in this case for non-disability with the non-disability Ontario Works program because the mandates are completely different.
I hear that from the people on OW who are disabled.
Mm-hmm. Right, it's not the same program. So for the government to say that, oh, we're going to raise the rates, and this is the agreement that Ms. Horvath came to with the premier today, that was the announcement, the issue that you'll have with that is that, okay, fine, they'll raise the rates, which means absolutely nothing when they... It means absolutely nothing when they amalgamate ODSP and Ontario Works anyway. Because then he's just raising the rates for Ontario Works and amalgamating ODSP. And there's still no...
You mean raising the rates for ODSP?
No, raising the rates for Ontario Works, but not ODSP. Oh. He just said he would raise the rates.
Oh, okay.
For Ontario Works.
Oh, okay.
But nothing was said about ODSP. Oh. And there's been no agreement as to whether or not they're going to maintain the benefits he's trying to cut from ODSP.
Right.
So their agreement is incomplete. So again, scream to Andrea Horvath and tell her that if you're on ODSP, that you wish to keep your benefits. And that you do not want to lose your community startup benefit and you'd rather not stay in shelters because you're disabled. So those are just some of the issues that we're trying to deal with right now and dealing with the government and the budget. The government hasn't announced any of its ODSP to date plans, nor have they really gone into any detail as to what these plans entail. Okay. And if you take a look in the budget, it states that those two programs, the community startup benefit and the home maintenance benefit, are going to be rolled into the affordable housing, overall affordable housing plan. Well, the issue is, if you have a wait list for affordable housing, how on earth are you going to accommodate all these extra people that you're going to be throwing out on the street?
Yeah.
And the other issue is, if a person has their own home, why would you want to put them into affordable housing? The whole thing does not make any sense, and there are no contingency plans for an operational success for this program.
Right.
It's a cash slash scenario that just will not work, mm-hmm. and we're going to end up paying for it in the long run, because there will be the segment of the population, one of them that they're counting on being able to contribute is the disabled. Well, they can't really contribute from the street.
No.
So if you do that, it causes a chain reaction in services. If they're on the street, they can't go to school. If they can't go to school, they can't contribute. They can't contribute, then you're supporting them for the rest of their lives, and the cycle goes on and on and on.
Well, and their health deteriorates, and the health costs go up.
Well, exactly, and hence the reason that we did the changes in Ontario Disability Support in the first place to include those programs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's really what we're dealing with there, Jeff.
I haven't an adjective for it, but it really sounds like devaluing people with disabilities, which McGuinty has been doing in one form or another since he was elected, since he ran his campaign.
He's gone from a premier that supported the disabled to one that's now trying to victimize the disabled.
I have told this story before, but I met one of his campaign workers for his first election campaign before he was premier on the GO train. And he listened to me for a few moments and he says, "I don't know what you people want." He says, "You got enough for KD and a roof over your heads. What else do you want?" And that's the attitude to disabled people that McGuinty brought with his staff and his organization into power. And it's gone downhill. If you can imagine it going downhill, it's gone downhill from there.
Well, I wouldn't say it's gone downhill. It went uphill, then down.
Okay.
Right? Because the AODA was a huge achievement. Okay, but the problem is that since then, there's been nothing.
Yeah.
And since then, okay, it's great to have the law, but if you're not going to enforce it, then what good is the law? Right? It's not even worth the paper that it's written on.
Right.
Okay, so what we need to do as a disabled community right now is all of us need to get together and get them to enforce it.
Yeah.
And how you do that is you let the MPPs know and the opposition parties that this is what the government has done is actually illegal.
Right.
Okay, and no budget with any illegal content can be supported.
All right.
Under any circumstances. And illegal, doesn't matter what law you break.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter if it's the Disabilities Act, if it's a regulation, it doesn't matter if it's the Highway Traffic Act. Breaking the law is breaking the law.
Okay.
That's exactly what he's done.
All right. Well, I understand it goes further than that, that there are some issues with not only the validity of the budget, but as a result, we have only one more reading to pass it. We have potential issues with the validity of the government.
Correct. The fact that the sitting government, even with this law on the books that they had put in, mm-hmm. Now let's everybody remember that it was the McGuinty government that passed the Disabilities Act. Okay, so in essence, they're breaking their own law.
Yeah.
Okay, which is the final insult. Okay, so how many more insults to the community is the community going to take?
Right? Yeah, they've taken a few.
So, you know, CFF, we never say, and never have we ever called for people, okay, to stand up in defiance. But in this particular point, defy, man. Go after them.
All right.
And don't let it happen. And don't let them forget, okay, that we do have a law.
Yeah.
And that there's nobody above the law, not even the premier.
Very good.
And the premier has to learn, like everybody, I guess like everybody else does, okay, that there are consequences to every action that we make, especially the illegal ones.
Right.
So he must be held accountable. Not needs to be held accountable, he must be held accountable.
We'll pause for a moment for what might be a tribute to the people living on Ontario's execrable benefits, Dale Watson, Lord, I'm Free.
Well, I got nowhere to go, I got no one to see. Yeah, that's true, I got nothing to do, don't you wish you were me. Lord, I'm free, oh Lord, I'm free. I'm free as a bird, ain't you heard? Lord, I'm free. Now nothing ties me down, I ain't got no chain. Listen now, ain't no vow gonna make me change my way. Lord, I'm free, yeah, Lord, I'm free. Yeah, free as a bird, ain't you heard? Lord, I'm free. That's right. I wake up when I'm done sleeping, and I go to sleep when I'm tired. Go when I feel like going, and I can go anytime I like. I eat when I get hungry, and I play until I am. Yeah, that's me. Oh, Lord, I'm free. Lord, I'm free. Oh, Lord, I'm free. Yeah, I'm as free as a bird, ain't you heard? Lord, I'm free.
What ramifications does this have for Horvath's and Hudak's position as opposition parties?
Well, it forces them to reject the budget. They have okay. to.
So have they?
Not
as
of yet.
Still to come. Okay. So the second reading is still, we're still awaiting it.
We're still awaiting it.
Okay. And the budget is unchangeable before the second reading.
Oh,
it's already submitted.
It's submitted.
Okay.
Okay, they came to an agreement today without looking at all the issues.
Wonderful.
I'm right now drafting an email to Andrea Horvath and to Tim Hudak, okay, explaining the issues again mm-hmm. and stating that just a rate increase is not enough. Mm-hmm. None of those benefits can be touched. The rate, we can freeze a rate increase.
Yeah.
But those benefits must remain intact.
Okay.
It's not the rate increase that's the important thing. It's the benefits that's the important thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll agree. Yeah. They can't be
abrogated. We can do without the $20 extra. The $20 is not going to replace the $799 we would lose from CSUB, nor the potential $1,500 we would lose from the home maintenance fund.
A little black humor here. I thought it was more like 10 for the 1% increase.
Whatever it happens to be, it isn't worth it.
Okay, all right.
We'll take the wage freeze for the benefits.
What should we be looking for, either on the TV or in the newspapers, as an outcome?
Well, if they really want to pay for ODSP, and if they're really worried about it, if they cut each and every MPP's wages by 10%. And every government worker's wages by 5%, okay, and I'm meaning the high management people that are making $145,000 a year. And if anybody wants to go online, you can actually look up all their wages in case you're interested.
Oh, good.
Okay, if you look it up on the if you look it up under the executive wages section in the Ministry of Finance, you'll see the financial report, and you can actually see each and every person's position.
Position.
So you'll be
okay.
able to see what the positions are.
Okay.
And how much they made per year.
Okay.
It's published.
All right.
Okay, and you'll be able to see things like the director of ODSP and the $135,000 a year that she makes.
Okay, good.
Okay, so all those expenditures are there. Okay, okay. So if we cut them by 10%.
Yeah.
Okay, and there's about 60 directors.
Yeah.
Okay, that's quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think Mr. McGinty needs to earn $500,000 a year, so we can knock him down a few points.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure, you know, him earning $400,000 a year would be good.
Enough, yeah.
Right? You know, we take these little savings, you know, here and there, and then we knock down the, then we take...
There's always dented cans of tuna, you know?
There's always that, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we take out all those areas there and we put, you know, we lower the amount of... duplication, okay, and ODSP and ODSP is not duplication from Ontario Works. They're two different programs. But, you know, if we take a look at hospitals and hospital executives and having six hospital executives making $1 million a year within one hospital, okay, and we look at, you know, over the number of hospital institutions that we have, you know, if we lowered them to maybe $500,000 a year from maybe $2 million a year.
Yeah.
You know, that's quite a bit of a savings.
What about the argument that, this is an aside, but what about the argument that they're all going to walk to the States if we cut them?
Oh, good. Then that means we can promote new people.
Yeah, that's
true. There's always a person who wants a job.
Yeah.
There's always people that can be trained to do a job.
Well, and probably good people, too.
That's right. So do you want people that are there for the money or people that are there for the job?
Well put.
That's the question you've got to ask.
Was there anything else that you wanted to say about this topic while we're on it of changes proposed to ODSP and changes prevented to or being prevented to ODSP and the budget in flux while this government teeters on the brink of losing power? Did you have another take on that?
ODSP itself is as a program has actually been is actually changed in a more positive than negative way. It's becoming more of a support program than it is becoming a pension program. That's very advantageous in a number of ways because what it does is it allows for people with ODSP to more pursue careers and pursue contract work, pursue university education, and so forth for the idea of employment or creating a career with a lot less fear than what was gained in the past. Okay? If it reverts to an Ontario Works program, all that'll be lost.
I understand
Ontario
that.
Works does not gain or trust or indemnity.
No.
The idea of Ontario Works is to warehouse until you become employed and to throw you off.
Yeah.
Okay, but at the same time to maintain you on Ontario Works so that the cities get their funding.
Okay.
And that was the reason that ODSP, Ontario Disability Support, was uploaded from the cities in the first place.
To the province.
Right. And that's the other thing, too. If on ODSP, it refers to an Ontario Works distribution system, that means effectively that the provincial government is trying to download those benefits back to the cities.
Ooh.
Okay. Now, because the cities administer Ontario Works. Now, which broke city is going to end up with ODSP?
Yeah.
Toronto?
Yeah.
Hamilton?
Yeah.
St. Catharines? Yeah. How about Niagara?
Or Windsor.
Or Windsor. Or Sarnia.
Or Sudbury.
Sudbury. Thunder Bay.
Yeah.
How about Nunavut? Because they're still under our system until such time as they've completed their own.
Right.
There are still some things they take from Ontario. I could be wrong and I can be corrected. But as far as I knew this year, they were still using some of our systems. Okay. So, what are we going to do about that? Are we going to allow the government, okay, to run over us like we always do?
Yeah.
Or are we going to object to it? The point of the matter is, okay, that we, okay, as a disabled community.
Yeah.
Okay. We have to stand together on this issue and we have to let people know that this is not acceptable. It's up to us.
Right.
It is not up to the politicians. It is not up to the... Yeah. It is not up to the politicians. It is not up to the... it's not up to the politicians. It's not up to the workers. It's up to us. It's our community.
That's true.
Okay. Yeah. And one problem that we have is that we've been expecting everybody to do the work for us.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Now it's time to do it ourselves.
On that note, Andrea Horvath, Hamilton constituency office numbers, number 544-9644. That's 905-544-9644. Andrea Horvath, Queens Park office number 416-325-2777. Bet you didn't know I had those on my cell phone, Andrea. 416-325-2777. These numbers aren't to be overused, but this isn't a time they will be. These are the numbers to call if you want to make Andrea Horvath aware of your feelings about depriving people with disabilities of their benefits.
Now, you are also going to get, when you call that number, you're going to get a 1-800 number to call. Okay, regarding where you make your feelings known about the budget. If you wait a little longer, it'll tell you what the main number is. So do not call the 1-800 number. Wait for the main number to come up and call that, and you will be met by a very nice reception lady who will definitely put you into the right, give you to the right people.
Good. Okay. Well, look, I really thank you for coming in here tonight. Circumstances are unusual. But that's nothing new for anybody with a disability. You stepped into the gap. It's time for us to step into the gap, Ben. Thanks again.
Okay.
Federal facilitator Ben Bishop of CFF explains why he believes Ontario's people with disabilities should rise up and call their MPPs to object to the combination of disability benefits under Ontario Works rules. And now it's time for Disrespect's review of the news. These aren't the original articles we read to you, but adaptations of the articles for the radio. The reporters who unearth these issues and the newspapers they appeared in are announced after each article. And in appreciation of a star reporter listening to our show today, although I'm not sure the management at the Star would appreciate our quoting their articles, most of our news today comes from the Toronto Star. Doctor fears for cities poor. Proposed agenda, a cut with a dull knife, concerned MD says. After years of skyrocketing health costs, the cash-strapped McGuinty government announced in its budget a series of tough austerity measures, including capping the growth of Ontario's health portfolio at 2% over the next 3 years. But for Dr. Gary Block, a family physician and University of Toronto professor who founded Health Providers Against Poverty, the government's austerity-focused agenda does a disservice to public health, especially for the poor. I'm very concerned, Block told the Star. I'm worried it's a cut with a dull knife, and it's largely the people who live in poverty, especially the extreme end of poverty, who are impacted the worst. In line with economist Don Drummond's recommendation, the McGuinty government's budget has proposed cuts to large provincial health agencies, capped funding for hospital corporations, and potential wage freezes for doctors. Block said those cuts will certainly affect the delivery of health care, but he added that wider social service cuts recommended in the budget, freezing welfare and disability support payments, for example, will do enormous damage to his patients' health in the short term. He compared Duncan's austerity plans to the sweeping social service cuts made in the mid-1990s. I worry this is a continuation of that same trend that will absolutely impact those who are most vulnerable first, and I think it's incredibly unfortunate, Block said. And I worry this will result in our society being less healthy, which should be the number one goal of the government. And that by Niamh Scallon in the Toronto Star. Welfare recipients brace for rate freeze. For Sharon Norman, Ontario's budget plan to freeze welfare rates is proof the McGuinty government was never really committed to cutting poverty. The welfare freeze means Norman and some 880,000 other adults and children living on Ontario Works and the Ontario Disability Support Program will be squeezed even more by inflationary increases in food, rent, and other necessities. The freeze is in fact a cut, anti-poverty activists say.
Norman struggles to survive on $599 a month from Ontario Works. As a volunteer at a West End food bank, Norman receives an extra $100 a month to pay for transportation, but all of that extra money goes towards paying her $690 monthly rent. With just $9 remaining, she is forced to rely on meals from soup kitchens and groceries from food banks. And with no money for TTC fare, she has no option but to spend hours a day walking across town to food banks, volunteer activities, and appointments. She knows she should try to find a cheaper apartment, but after losing so much, she can't handle losing her home too. "It's safe and clean, and as a single woman, I can't imagine moving," she says, tearing up. Norman was also shocked at the budget's plan next January to eliminate two benefits that help people on welfare with urgent housing-related expenses once every 24 months. The community startup and maintenance benefit covers the cost of replacing a bedbug-infested mattress or moving. The home repair benefit pays for emergency plumbing, roof patching, and damage due to fire or flooding. In addition, the budget is also capping health-related discretionary benefits for adults on Ontario Works, which pays for things like funerals, glasses, and emergency dental care. The welfare cuts in the budget are on top of the previously announced $90 million in budget savings achieved by delaying a hike in the Ontario Child Benefit to the province's poorest children. Norman, who is part of Put Food in the Budget, a group calling on the government to introduce a $100 nutritious food benefit, can't understand why the province's most vulnerable people are being forced to bear an even heavier burden. "How do they expect people to survive?" she asked. "It's beyond me." And that by Laurie Montsebraten, social justice reporter in the Toronto Star. A crisis in home care for seniors. Family caregivers in distress, report finds. A new Health Council of Canada report on the state of home care services for senior citizens nationwide describes how many people caring for loved ones who have complex and multiple health needs at home are in distress because they are not receiving enough support from the public system. The report from the independent agency funded by Health Canada showed that in Ontario, family caregivers devote an average of 18 hours per week to caring for their loved one, compared to 7 hours per week provided by home care services. Family caregivers in Ontario devote an average of nearly 30 hours per week caring for those with physical disability, cognitive impairment, challenging behavior, wandering, and falls. The report recommends governments take a closer look at the need for home care, which can be more cost-effective than hospitals and long-term care facilities, as the Canadian healthcare system grapples with an aging population. "I think in Canada we have an opportunity to make sure that we really put home care as a priority and then only invest in nursing home beds as a second or last resort," Health Council of Canada CEO John Abbott said. The Ontario budget committed to increased investments in home care and community service by an average of 4% annually over the next 3 years. And that by Joanna Smith of the Ottawa Bureau in the Toronto Star. Community housing residents vent about drugs and bedbugs. Sheila Clavier, talking to the microphone in a packed room at a TCH apartment building near Yonge in Eglinton, explains she's had cockroaches in her apartment going on 10 years. They persist even though she's been fumigated 8 times, even though she's tossed her hand-woven rugs and 12 bags of clutter and given away hundreds of her favorite books. "It didn't work," she said, adding later that she's also been threatened with eviction. "What do I do now?" The town hall was the first of four that will be held across the city this month. Members of the agency's board were in attendance, as well as a handful of staffers, taking down names and individual complaints. Bylaw officers, public health, and the police were on hand as well. Councillor Cesar Palacio, Ward 17, Davenport, who sits on the board and chairs the Tenant and Community Services Committee, said all comments and questions raised at the town halls will be turned into a public report that will be brought to the community. The agency also asked tenants to offer suggestions for its latest community management plan. Concerns aired by about two dozen speakers ranged from worries over drug deals in their building to stolen parking spots to fears their homes will be sold off to the all-too-familiar tales of bedbug infestations. The beleaguered TCH is the city's largest community housing provider, giving shelter to 165,000 tenants, about 6% of Toronto's population. Last winter, two scathing reports by the Auditor General revealed million-dollar sole-source contracts, lavish spending on boat cruises, Christmas parties, and meetings in spas. Civilian members of the board resigned. Its CEO was given her walking papers. And that by Jim Poisson, staff reporter at the Toronto Star. Ontario cracks down on high-risk seniors' homes. Investigators are using new provincial licensing rules to target 50 retirement homes in Ontario suspected of elder abuse and neglect. The homes already face serious complaints and must prove they can care for seniors before getting one of Ontario's new retirement home licenses, says Mary Beth Valentine, CEO of the Retirement Homes Regulatory Authority. As of April 15th, all retirement homes in Ontario, roughly 700, had to apply for an operating license under rules set out by the new Retirement Homes Act. They cannot operate without a license. Seniors Minister Linda Jeffrey said the new licensing system will put negligent operators on notice. Jeffrey told the Star, "Our seniors have the right to expect they are going to be safe and comfortable and treated with dignity in their retirement. I would expect the Retirement Home Authority would root out those bad apples and get them to clean up their act or shut them down." At least 40,000 Ontario seniors live in retirement homes. That number is expected to increase dramatically as the baby boomer generation ages. Most will be licensed or not by March 31st, 2013, Valentine said. Lori Johnston, CEO of the Ontario Retirement Communities Association, said she believes every effort will be made to help homes meet the standards. "The whole purpose is to raise the bar in the sector, not to put people out on the street, out of home." About 80% of Ontario's retirement homes are members of the association and must pass an accreditation test before joining, she said. And that at the Toronto Star by Moira Welsh, staff reporter. Lean on drug industry, top MD says. Canada's top doctor is urging the federal and provincial governments to lean on the pharmaceutical industry to resolve the national drug shortage by using as leverage the $2 billion in subsidies they give it annually. Have governments considered using these inducements as a lever to ensure Canadians have access to the drugs they need? Asked Dr. John Hagee, president of the Canadian Medical Association. The drug shortage has been a recurring issue around the world for years because of uncertainty in the supply chain, but it recently hit crisis proportions in Canada. Earlier this year, Sandoz Canada announced it would suspend or slow production of many of its drugs in order to upgrade a Quebec plant. The move came in response to quality control concerns raised by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. A fire at the plant last month further hampered production, exacerbating the drug shortage. Canada now faces a shortage of 200 drugs, including everything from antidepressants to asthma puffers and from chemotherapy drugs to anesthetics, Hagee said. The shortage is forcing doctors to waste time looking for alternatives and is jeopardizing patient care, he warned. The disappearance of those vital drugs in helping us do our jobs puts our patients at risk of continued risk or relapse. And that by Teresa Boyle, health reporter for the Toronto Star. Mentally ill face crisis in our city. More than a dozen concerned citizens and activists made recommendations on how to prevent police shootings of the mentally ill, and the Toronto Police Services Board listened. The board, which also heard dramatic personal stories from families who had experienced violent interactions with police, asked Police Chief Bill Blair and the Mental Health Subcommittee to review the recommendations and report back. The group proposed ways to fix what members said is ineffective police training and a poor response to people in a mental health crisis, particularly failing to use calming de-escalation techniques. Many who spoke were horrified by the police response to Michael Elligon, 29, who was killed by an officer's bullet on February 3rd after he left a psychiatric ward and was found roaming in a gown and socks, carrying scissors. The Special Investigations Unit ruled there was no evidence to charge the officer who shot Elligon. Before the meeting, about 24 activists gathered in symbolic hospital gowns outside police quarters with a banner that read, "Never Again," the name of a new citizen coalition seeking an end to such deaths. They read out the names of people killed by police in recent months. Acting Board Chair Michael Thompson was impressed with the caliber of their recommendations and the calm, civil, and purposeful way they made their points. At times, there was loud applause, but no displays of anger. Former Mayor John Sewell, coordinator of the Toronto Police Accountability Coalition, called for training that moves away from a control model to one focused on de-escalation and urged that mobile crisis intervention teams set up to deal with mentally ill people operate in all police divisions around the clock. Currently, they are in only 11 of 17 divisions, are available only part-time, and are never the first responders. The board heard from people who said they are afraid to call 911 about situations involving the mentally ill, fearing police will shoot to kill. Anita Zaghetti of the Mental Health Legal Committee, a lawyers' organization, said the recent killings have become a crisis in our city. Citizens are worried that Toronto will become known for the death of mental health patients. There are increasing levels of fear of clients who are afraid to contact police. Police Chief Bill Blair later admitted to media that there are lessons to be learned from the Elligon shooting, which he called tragic. That story by Curtis Rush, police reporter for the Toronto Star. Now a break with Neil Halstead, new disc at CFMU, The Cut, High, Low, and In Between.
Just snowed, I guess, and they closed the roads into your heart. You came home like a dead star, no light left, no loving anymore. Years ago, you sent a postcard, it's the one that always made me laugh. It said send for reinforcements, cause there's too much here for me, love. What could they say? They say to make you feel okay. What could they do? What could they do to make you feel okay? Years ago, I read a story about a man who had a plan. Tied himself onto a balloon, yet cut the ties and tried to reach the moon. rescued by an airline pilot 15,000 feet above the world. They dragged him down, they wished him luck, they hoped that he had learned his lesson well. Could they say, what could they say to make him feel okay? What could they do? What could they do to make him feel okay? Kathy, I can still see stars, the same ones that we wished upon. I know you know your way around, but I can tell you're losing ground. I can see you on the radar, but you know I could never bring you back. You cut the ties, you're floating free, yeah, high and low and in between. Cut the ties, you're floating free, yeah, high and low and in between.
Healthcare study finds pay-for-performance does little for patients. As Ontario begins to rein in healthcare costs, some health policy experts predict that the province may look at paying hospitals for good performance, rewarding those institutions that take the best care of their patients. But a major study published by the Harvard School of Public Health has found that pay-for-performance, in which hospitals are paid to improve their quality of care, does surprisingly little to improve patient outcomes. This study teaches us that we haven't really figured out the pay part, and we haven't figured out the performance part of pay for performance, said Ashish Jha, Associate Professor of Health Policy and Management at the Harvard School of Public Health and lead author of the study. Jha cautioned the study should not be interpreted to mean that all pay performance programs do not work. It just says that we have a lot of work to do figuring out what right payment schemes are and what the right performance metrics are. And that in the Metro News, Torstar News Service. The poor talked to McGuinty. It started with a holiday greeting card to Premier Dalton McGuinty last December and an invitation to people on welfare to write their own personal messages. The card depicting Santa McGuinty handing out billions in tax cuts to corporations while offering just pennies to people on welfare struck a nerve. Emails began to pour in from people struggling to get by on welfare benefits that are $5,000 to $10,000 a year below the poverty line. Said Sharon Norman, 51, a member of the Put Food in the Budget campaign and a Toronto welfare recipient who lives on $9 a month after paying rent. We thought they should get the chance to talk to him, even if he wasn't there in person. Thursday, April 19th, campaign organizers took a life-size mannequin of McGuinty to soup kitchens, drop-ins, Toronto sidewalks to hear what low-income people think about the Liberals' recent austerity budget and welfare rate freeze. It's the beginning of a two-month tour of 40 communities in Ontario to let those on social assistance tell the Premier how the measures affect them. The group has been waging a two-year campaign to get McGuinty to introduce a $100 monthly healthy food benefit for people on social assistance. Last year, the province increased benefits by just 1%. The measure boosted rates by a meager $7 to $5.99 a month for a single person on Ontario Works, and by $11 to $1,064 for someone on the Ontario Disability Support Program. Pauline Bryant, 49, said McGuinty doesn't know what it's like to live on welfare. Bryant was earning $18 an hour in 2008 when the grocery chain was sold to Metro, and she lost her job at Dominion. 2 years later, she was laid off again. Today, after a year on EI and another year on welfare, Bryant's monthly rent of $824.80 eats up all but $106.20 of her welfare check. Do you know how hard it is to explain to your kid there is no money for transit fare or food? And that story by Lori Montsebraten, social justice reporter at The Star. New hope on prostate cancer. For years, the prime treatment for prostate cancer was removing the entire gland or attacking a broad area based on random biopsies that hoped to find their target. Lead author Dr. Hashim Ahmed of University College London told The Star, in the last 5 years, improved imaging and improved biopsies have meant we can localize the disease and determine how aggressive it is. Now we also have the technology that can ablate small areas of the prostate. The marriage of the two in the last 2 or 3 years means I don't need to treat the whole prostate, I can just treat the tumor. The next stage, Ahmed said, is large-scale human trials. The current management at the moment is that most men are advised to have treatment, but the best risk for low-grade disease is probably no treatment, he said. So what is important in this research, as well as the results, is how it advances diagnosis so clinicians can get to the point where they know when not to treat. And that story by Leslie Ciarulla-Taylor, staff reporter at the Toronto Star. Ontario's Poor Can't Wait, by Simon Black, a researcher in urban social policy at the City Institute at York University and a member of Peel Poverty Action Group, whom you've heard on the show. The Commission for the Review of Social Assistance slipped under the media's radar and was greeted with little fanfare by the government and general public alike. This report discusses different approaches to improving some of the key areas of the province's welfare system and is an important step in the broader review headed by ex-StatsCan Chief Munir Sheikh and former United Way of Greater Toronto CEO Francis Lankin. While the Drummond Report takes a largely hands-off approach to social assistance, deferring to the work of the Commission, much in it runs counter to the spirit and stated goals of both the review of social assistance and the broader strategy of poverty reduction. For one, Drummond recommends rolling back the Ontario Child Benefit, a subsidy that helps low-income families provide for their children. The OCB has been partially credited with the small but nevertheless important reduction in child poverty Ontario has seen over the past few years. But more generally, the report is silent on the concerns of the poor, from much-needed increases in childcare funding to the construction of more affordable housing. Drummond was, after all, primarily tasked with discerning where to make cuts, not how to expand social programs. Drummond's austerity package could well push Ontario's unemployment rate into double digits. McGuinty has raised Ontario disability and welfare rates slightly, but these increases have not kept up with inflation. If welfare was to be returned to pre-Harris levels, the government would have to raise rates by close to 60%. You can be sure that such an increase is not in the cards in the current political climate. So the next few years, likely the next decade, look tough for low-income Ontarians. Lower childcare subsidies, larger waits for social housing, persistent unemployment, and more people caught in the dire dilemma of whether to feed the kids or pay the rent. Many of us live one paycheck away from poverty. What happens to social assistance and other social supports should be a concern for us all. And as a recent Metcalf Foundation report concluded, between 2000 and 2005, the number of working poor increased by 42%, numbering 113,000 people in the Toronto region alone. Those numbers have certainly risen since the Great Recession began in 2008. An even larger number of people are near poor. The poor are not only those living on social assistance. In the mid-80s, anti-poverty, labor, and women's groups mobilized to influence the direction of the provincial Liberal NDP coalition's social assistance review. Poor people's marches snake through three of Ontario's largest city. The end result was a 25% cut in welfare rates. The end result was a 25% increase in welfare rates and the humanization of many aspects of a stigmatizing and punitive system. History shows us that poor people's silence will be met with government inaction. As American academics Francis Fox Piven and Richard Cloward put it in their classic book, Regulating the Poor, a placid poor get nothing, but a turbulent poor sometimes gets something. The Drummond Report tells poor people they must wait. Now it is up to the poor to reply, "We will not." And again, that by Simon Black, researcher in urban social policy at the City Institute at York University and a member of the Peel Poverty Action Group. And that's all the news there is for Disrespect this week. But come back next week. There will be more. And outgoing with Jay Farrar, Fly High.
I'm flying on this plane, back into your arms again. And my eyes are sad and cloudy, my teardrops fall like rain. As I look down past my wing, flying home to you again. In the clouds I see your picture, while the end flying high up in the sky, but my heart keeps looking for you all around, down on the ground. On every hill, in every house, I see flying here of those arguments we had, of the times we slammed our door and said goodbye, goodbye. I walked away a dozen times, I drove away 100 more, but all the trains and all the buses brought me back here to our door. Flying high.